So I'll just tell you guys a little bit about me. I started homeschooling my four kids 5 years ago. This is our fifth year. My kids are 10, 8, and my twins are 3.5. And I basically started deciding to homeschool because when we tried putting them in public school, we had a lot of like just social issues come up with bullying and with inappropriate conversations coming up about getting drunk and just things that I felt like my kids were too young to be able to navigate at the time. And then the final nail for me was just when faith topics would come up at school. I felt like the school was very like discriminatory against people of the faith. They wouldn't allow my son to bring like a Bible for show and tell, and they made him feel uncomfortable when he wanted to pray before he ate. And I just felt like the schools have become more and more abrasive when it comes to topics of God. They don't want the kids to even utter the word. So it just felt like the right decision for me to try homeschooling. And I did it over the summer after kindergarten. And I realized how fast my son was learning. And I honestly felt like if I would have put him in first grade, he would have been so bored because we were already doing like second and third grade work. He was reading like at a fifth grade reading level already. So I was like, how am I going to put him in first grade? Like he's going to get in trouble because he's going to already know everything. So I had started looking into homeschooling, and you know, that's kind of where I am now. I started homeschooling him in New York, where we don't have as many options as you guys have here with charter schools. And since it works, I continue to do it for my daughter too. And now I'm doing it with my twins who are 3.5. So I'm going to try to make sure that this conversation is geared towards toddlers, but I'll be trying to give you guys the insight that I have since now my kids are older, like the things that I did that worked and the things that didn't work, kind of like the hindsight is 2020 perspective. But if I do go too far into that and you guys need more practical tips for right now, just feel free to reel me in because I know that can be hard. There's so much to talk about with this topic, so feel free to interrupt me. This is super casual. All right, so I'm going to go through these questions, and then I'm not seeing any questions coming in on the chat yet, so I'm going to just go through these, and then you guys let me know if I'm on top, if I'm on target for what you guys wanted to know.
Actually, it's Rachel here. There's a couple of questions in chat. Amber Collins asking, how often do you report back to the charter school? And saying, showing 2 to 4 methods, do you mean math? Can you give an example for other courses? So we've received a couple in chat, just FYI.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now I'm seeing those. We did talk about reporting back to the charter school, but I will... Oh, no, we didn't. That was before when you were asking about the funding. Okay, so let me just address those two questions really quick before I forget to do them, because those I don't get those questions as often. So this will kind of go with the question about what your options are. So I'm going to do question number 3 first in terms of what are your options with homeschooling. So your 3 options with homeschooling in California are to homeschool with a charter school, which is a public school. And when you homeschool with a charter school, you would be signing up like with a public school. They're going to ask you for their birth certificate, for their immunization records. And that's what you're doing. When you pick a charter school, you're choosing to report to them and to follow what their rules are. They are going to ask you to give them a learning sample once per month. You'll meet with a teacher on Zoom because of COVID. We used to meet in person, and you can meet in person, but right now we're meeting on Zoom. And she just kind of asks you what you've been covering for the month, what you've been doing for math, what you've been doing for science. Some charter schools are more strict and they'll want a sample for every subject. My charter school, which is Blue Ridge, they only ask for 1 sample per subject. So this month it's language arts. They want to see a sample. Next month it's science. Next month it's math, and so on and so forth. They follow the regular calendar year. So from August until May, we meet, and then June, July, and August, we don't meet. Well, no, June, July, we don't meet. That feels weird. Yeah, June, July. Now, when it comes to how often you report, that's really all you have to do is report once a month. They do have other periods of time throughout the year where they have to do standardized testing. But again, because a lot of you guys have toddlers, I'm assuming a lot of you guys have toddlers or you have kindergarten aged kids. I don't think the charter schools require testing at that age. You can only apply to a charter school if your child is turning 5 before September 1st. So if your child is not turning 5, then you can't even apply to the charter school. And legally, you're not required to homeschool your child until they turn 6. So if you're not sure about their birthday, like where it falls or whatever, the legal requirement for making a decision about where you're going to send your child to school in California, the law is when they turn 6, the year that they turn 6 before September 1st. Sometimes they say December 1st. So you just have to check whatever the California law is at that time. So that's what the reporting is with the charter school. My kids take a standardized test at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, and it's online, and they always score really high. It's a very easy test. It's not the type of test you study for. It's kind of like the SAT. If any of you guys have taken the SAT, you can like prepare for it, but it's not like you would study certain topics or anything. It's kind of like you learn about reading comprehension and math. Those are like the two subjects that come up on the standardized test. It's just checking to see how well they read and do math. So how often do you report? I hope that answers your question, but let me know if I'm missing a certain component of that question that you wanted to know. The other thing you asked was, when you say that they must show 2 to 4 methods, do you mean regarding math? Can you give me an example for other courses? I'm not sure if I understand your question. 2 to 4 methods. Did you mean 2 to 4 subjects? I don't know if Amber is still on. Let's see if she's still here. Yeah, Amber, let me know if you can clarify your question. I'm not sure if I understand what you meant. How is everyone else doing? Are you understanding what I'm talking about with the charter school? Hopefully I'm not confusing anyone. Before, Michelle was asking about options for outsourcing, like say you feel overwhelmed with doing all the homeschooling yourself. And so I was telling, I'm going to put this right here underneath the questions. Huckleberry Learning Center is in Santa Clarita in Valencia. And Learn Beyond the Book. They have Canyon Country, Valencia, Van Nuys, and they might even have a 4th campus now. Those are the 2 outsourcing places that I know about in Santa Clarita that are for homeschoolers, and they have classes throughout the day that you could drop your kids off to take. And those classes start as young as age 4. They do reading classes, they do math classes, history, science, art, piano, even like different guitars. They do tutoring, like personal one-on-one tutoring. So those are the 2 options for if you wanted to drop your kids off. They do require masks right now, but the classes are very small. I would say there's like 7 to 10 kids in a class. And the teachers who are teaching the class are super passionate about what they're teaching. So it's very likely that your child's going to enjoy it because the teacher is so dynamic. My kids have always really enjoyed their classes. They do Lego classes, Minecraft classes. The price range, I see Rachel asking about the price range for the drop-off options. It varies a lot. Like for a cooking class, my kids did a cooking class. That class was a little more expensive because it includes the food. So that class was like $325, and $325 covered them for 10 weeks, 1 hour once a week. Was it an hour or an hour and a half? It might've been like an hour and a half. So yeah, $325 per child for a 10-week semester. And again, I didn't pay for that. My charter school paid for that. So I get $2,600 per kid to pay for stuff like that. So I didn't actually have to pay for that, but obviously that comes out of my money that I could have used for curriculum. But curriculum really isn't even that expensive either. So
what charter are you with?
I'm with the Blue Ridge Academy charter. I'm going to put charter school options down here because I know this comes up a lot too. These are the options you have. These are the names of the charter schools. You can't be enrolled with a charter school and a private school. So there are some private schools that you can enroll your child in. That's another option for homeschooling. But obviously that's more expensive because you have to pay private school tuition. And that can be more like $3,000, or it could be like $1,500 if you're doing part-time. Sky Mountain, iLead, and Gorman. Those are like the top ones that I know about. And what I always suggest to people is that you should apply to all the charter schools and see where you get in, since right now they're full and they are only doing waitlist right now, but they are hiring teachers according to their waitlist. So if you get on the waitlist, then you're really gonna increase the chances that you'll get accepted. So you should start applying now if you want your kid to be accepted for the fall. But let's just say you don't get into a charter school, or let's say that you have a really bad experience with the charter school and you don't want to be with a charter school, you want to homeschool independently. The other option you have is to homeschool with a private school affidavit. So I'm going to put that down here, private school affidavit. And what a private school affidavit is that you are basically declaring your home as a private school. You are the principal, you are the teacher, your school has a name, and you report to really no one. You're declaring your home as a private school, and you don't really have to check in with anyone. And what the state of California suggests is that you do keep records of what you're doing. So like that could just be a workbook of stuff that you're working through, and you keep an attendance record, which is just, it could just be like a calendar that you put a check mark on that says that they did school that day. But no one really checks on you. And with this option, you have no teachers checking on you. You have no funding with this option. A lot of parents prefer this type of privacy though, and they like that they have the freedom and flexibility of not being told that they can't do faith-based topics, not being told where they can spend their money, not being told, you know, how fast they have to go through something. So a lot of parents like the private school affidavit option, but for some brand new homeschoolers, they feel really scared to do this because they're like, how do I know if I'm doing this right? No one's checking on me. So it just depends on what you feel comfortable with. The third option you have, so the first option is the charter school. The second option is the private school affidavit. And the third option is to do a private satellite program, which is a PSP. And with this option, you're paying a private school $350 for the year, and they are going to keep records for you and they're going to help you. They're not going to give you money. You're paying them to help you keep records and to help you find curriculum and to help you find resources. So this is actually a cool option for someone who can't get into a charter school but still wants some support. I would say that if you have a child with special needs, or you want them to be assessed for special needs, or like they need speech therapy, or they need occupational therapy, or they have a learning disability, the best place to get support for that is in a charter school, because they do have, you can get assessments done just like if they were in school. You can get assessments done for that if you're suspicious of it. With the private school affidavit, you obviously would have to go through your own insurance and pay for that out of pocket. And the private satellite program, similar. So for example, my son needed to get speech therapy. He was having trouble articulating the letter S. He was saying like, instead of S. So when I tried to get speech therapy for him through my doctor, I had to pay like $50 every time to get the evaluation done. And it was really expensive because then every time he goes for speech, I have to pay for it. When I did it through the charter school, they gave me a laptop for free so that we could do the speech therapy sessions. They gave me a headset, a video camera, and we did speech therapy for a year via Zoom. And my son no longer has that trouble with his speech. So it was impacting his ability to be understood by others. So that's why they were willing to pay for it. If it was more like just something that he doesn't speak clearly, that they wouldn't probably have covered it. So anytime your child has something where it's affecting their ability to communicate and learn, they will assess them for that learning disability. Same thing for his occupational therapy. He was having trouble writing clearly, and we got him occupational therapy, and now he's much better. So the charter school, my point in bringing this up is that the charter school is really a great place to get support if you think your child needs it, both financially and academically. But if you're kind of wanting to do your own thing and have your own flexibility, then the other two options that I talked about are great. I'm just going to pause for a second to see if anyone needs more clarification about anything I said before I move on. Everyone good? It's a lot of information. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the top. The first question I usually get is about how you start homeschooling. And what I usually tell people that they should do when they're starting to homeschool is they should familiarize themselves with the law. So the law in California, basically, you can find it on a website called HSLDA. I'm going to see if I could share my screen. Can you guys see my screen still with the website up or no? Probably not. Let's see.
No, we can see your screen with the questions. That's it.
Okay. I may not be able to share the whiteboard at the same time as... I may not be able to share the whiteboard at the same time as the website, but I will put the link to the website on my whiteboard since you guys could see it. And so what HSLDA is they are a homeschool legal defense association for homeschoolers. So like say you were in a custody battle with your spouse and they were accusing you of being educationally neglectful and you needed legal support, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association is where you would get that support. You would basically have a retainer for a lawyer with expertise in homeschooling laws on, you know, in your resource pocketbook, so to speak. So like you can pay for a membership fee. I think it's like $200 or something for the year. And you have that, you have unlimited access to help with legal homeschool law. So that's usually the first step when you're learning to, when you're beginning to homeschool, is you should familiarize yourself with what are the laws, what are you required to do? And I kind of already went through it with you guys about the age. You should know at what age you're required to make a decision about your child's schooling. and just to review that again, your child, whatever year they turn 6 by September 1st, you must comply with homeschooling laws or you must send your child to school. Otherwise you could be accused of educational neglect, you know, if somebody were to report you. But if your child is 5 and they do not turn 6 by September 1st, then you are not under, you know, legal requirement for you to start doing anything with them. However, the charter schools will accept you at age 5 if you wanted to do that. Just kind of like you could do kindergarten optionally, but it's not required, same thing. So once you familiarize yourself with the law in California, you can look at all your different options, which we already went through. In the state of California, you have 3 options: the charter school, the private school, or the private satellite. You should familiarize yourself with your options there. And then usually you would start to research those options. You would decide what approach you want to do. And honestly, you can change your mind. Like say you really want to do the charter school, but then you try it and halfway through the year, you're like, this is horrible. This is so stressful. I don't like this. I want to take my kid out. My friend Jean actually she's here? Yes, she is here. My friend Jean actually decided that for her children. I don't know if she's able to share about her experience, but my friend Jean, she did decide that she wanted to withdraw her child from the charter school, and she did a private school affidavit. So I'm sharing that with you guys to help you understand that you don't have to make a decision and be married to it. You can change your mind and vice versa. Say you do the private school affidavit because you can't get into a charter school. And then later on, you find out you get accepted. You can then go ahead and apply for the charter school and, you know, you can change your mind is the point. Now, when it comes to Jean, let me know in the chat if you're able to share about your experience. I don't want to put you on the spot if you're not able to talk, but let me know.
I'm here. I'm able to talk.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So hi, ladies. Anyhow, my experience was I went from homeschooling one child through a charter to 3. And the amount of work that it took to do that, we had no time for anything else I wanted to do. Our whole vision of why we homeschooled in the first place was lost because we just spent so much time in a schoolroom, work, 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 because we had to turn in these sample sheets every month on top of our PLT was, she was very strict. So she wanted to go through every single page of work we had done. And it began to be too much. There was more tears in our classroom than there was happiness. So at that point, I decided that it was not right for us at the time until I can get a better grasp on, you know, how to homeschool three children and figure out a schedule and understand how each of my children learn. So we pulled our children out and we filed a PSA, and I have to say it was the best decision for us at that time. Would I ever go back to a charter school? It's possible, because I do have a better grasp now on the way my children learn and our schedule.
Yeah, that's thank awesome. You so much for that, Dean. That's really helpful. That way, at least other parents hear that I'm not just making stuff up, that you totally went through that experience. And I love that you have both sides to share, that, you know, you there's benefits to being with the charter school, but there's also the disadvantages of feeling like, you know, every month you have to check in with this teacher and they're going to be asking you, did you do this? Did you do that? And of course, you can always tell your teacher, no, we're kind of having a hard time understanding this topic. We need more time with this. And legally, your teacher really couldn't say, well, that's not good enough. You're left behind now, which brings me to my other question that I have on this list, which is, I get this question all the time. How do you know that your child isn't falling behind? And I'm sure like a lot of you guys probably worry about that, because you feel like the only way for your child to be up to par is if they were in school. But I think that's a common misunderstanding people have. They assume that because your child's in school, they're not behind. But that's not true. Your child could be in school and they don't get it, but it doesn't matter. You have to move on with the class. The advantage to homeschooling is that you being there one-on-one with your child, you know that they don't get it. You see it. They can't connect the dots. They don't make connections to other subjects. When you ask them questions, they aren't able to answer you. So that's something that unfortunately in a classroom, you know, teachers can't really do that. If your child takes a test and they pick the right answer by accident, you kind of just assume the kid gets it, but they didn't. They just kind of guessed, or maybe they understood it short term. Yes. Okay. So it's kind of an assumption that we think that kids are not behind just because they're in school. Now, when it comes to like when you're homeschooling and your kid is falling behind or they're taking longer to get something, it's okay, because you're not going to get left behind in homeschool. You can take extra time to cover something. And if they're behind in a grade level with something, there's no emergency with that. You can allow your child to be behind in a grade level until they get it. And when they get it, they might move through content faster. So, you'd have to kind of just be comfortable with allowing your child to go move at their pace and getting them help when they need help. You know, if you really see that they're struggling and you're not able to help them, then it's important for you to admit that and look into your options with tutoring, with classes, with one-on-one support. All of those things are available to homeschoolers. So that's kind of the short answer to that question. But if anyone has a specific concern about being behind, speak now so that I can address that. Most homeschoolers though are not, they may be behind in like a certain subject, but they're usually very advanced in other subjects. So for example, my kids both are in, like legally they're in fifth grade and third grade according to their birth date, but academically they're in different grades for different subjects. So they are on grade level for math, but for reading and reading comprehension, they're both at like a middle school and high school level. Same thing for their writing. I feel like their writing isn't where it would be if they were in school. I feel like they're more below grade level with their writing. At least they were for a while. And then my son took a creative writing class at Huckleberry. Literally, it was an 8-week class. And he was staying up at night with a flashlight writing stories. Now he writes like chapter books. I couldn't even get this child to write a sentence. But it was a matter of me being willing to admit that I wasn't doing a great job encouraging him to write. I was too scared and worried about him being behind. So I put that pressure and fear on him. And I made the environment around writing, I made it very stressful on him. And I think he felt the disappointment from me that he was writing sloppy and he wasn't writing enough words and he was making a backwards letter or he forgot a period. And I was like so obsessed with all these little things that I thought he should be able to do that I couldn't even let him relax into the experience. And what I realized about writing is that not only does a child need to be a strong reader to write well, they also need to like remember how to spell everything, organize all their thoughts, put them in order. Then they also have to do their grammar and capitalize. There's a lot of things we're asking of kids when we ask them to write a sentence. And we don't realize that because we're adults and we've already kind of mastered it. But for a child who's still learning like which direction their B's and D's go, and they're still like remembering what is a quotation mark, what's a question mark, those things can be overwhelming. And so what I realized is I needed to outsource. I had to realize that I was not a good person to teach him how to write because I was too emotionally invested and I wasn't able to like step out of my emotions. So I did put him in the creative writing class and it was exactly the environment he needed. There was a teacher there who gave them writing prompts to let them write horror stories. I would have never let him write a horror story because of my own issues with like scary movies, but that's what he wanted to write about. That's what got him excited. So that was my experience with in terms of falling behind and then watching my kids catch up. Jean, I don't know if you want to share anything. I see you're off mute. Oh no, you're not off mute. It says you're not.
Oh no, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just want to pause for a second, make sure I'm not going too fast. Is anyone else have anything that they wanted to ask or add? If there's any homeschool moms that are on that, I did ask a few moms to come who could share, you know, so if there's any moms on the chat who have older kids or have already been homeschooling and you want to share anything, please feel free. But if not, I'll keep going down the list. Okay. So we did kind of did question one, question two, question three, and question four. So for question five about how much it costs to homeschool. So you can totally homeschool for free. There's a ton of curriculums that are free online. One of them that I know is called, oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on it. Homeschooling for free. Let me see what it's called. Oh, it's called All-in-One Homeschooling. It's called allinonehomeschool.com, or it's called, another name for it is Easy Peasy All-in-One Homeschool. And it's literally a free curriculum that's online that you can print out. And it goes from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade. There's a ton of like resources inside of it for help too. So that's something that you can literally do for free. Something that I've done to save money with homeschooling is I use the BrainQuest workbooks on Amazon. BrainQuest workbooks on Amazon are like $6 and they kind of cover all the common core curriculum, all the things your kids would learn in school anyway. They have all those subjects in one workbook. So I think they even have a pre-K one now too. So if you think that you can't afford to homeschool, that's so not true. A lot of people homeschool for free or for very little. And there's also a blog called Homeschooling on a Shoestring, where she teaches you about how she saves money, how she uses the library to borrow books. You'd be surprised how much your library has curriculum in it, but you just don't see it because it's not like, it's kind of filed away with the adult stuff. But they have things like Hooked on Phonics for teaching your kids to learn how to read. They have a ton of like subscriptions, like even to ABC Mouse, you wouldn't even have to pay for a subscription to that with your library card. You can even get passes to museums with your library card, you know, in LA County. I don't know if you guys know, but LA County and Santa Clarita are two separate library systems. But yeah, I go to the Castaic branch and the Stevenson Ranch branch, and they can like borrow resources from all of LA County. So that's the library is going to be your best friend because the library has so many classes and workshops and just support for homeschoolers, you know, like we listen to audiobooks with our library card. And that's a great way to save money, is just borrowing books from the library. The other thing that a lot of homeschoolers do is they borrow curriculum from their charter school, or they borrow curriculum from other homeschool moms. And it's kind of like you're swapping. So it's not like you're taking the curriculum from someone, but I'm saying, I'm going to borrow this. I want to just flip through it and see how it feels, see what I like it, like about it, don't like about it. And so that's another way you can save money, is just by having other moms who are homeschoolers. You can borrow what they're using. You can let them borrow what you're using. And it ends up being a really great way to save money. What else with homeschooling and cost? The other thing is there's a website called Teachers Pay Teachers, and you can print off worksheets from there. But the fun thing about Teachers Pay Teachers is that you can print off worksheets that are more fun. Like say your son is really into Spider-Man or Paw Patrol, or let's say your daughter's really into unicorns and cupcakes. You can print out worksheets that are like math with cupcakes or math with Spider-Man. And what kid doesn't like want to do that? When they see that, they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I love. And they want to be more engaged during the lesson because it has Spider-Man on it. So it definitely makes sense to lean into your kids' passions. If your kids already are showing you that they like something a lot, then don't ignore that. Anything that your child likes, you can use it to teach them. Get books about that. You'd be surprised. The library has My Little Pony. It has unicorns. It has Paw Patrol, PJ Mask, Spider-Man. What else do kids like? Give me ideas, guys. What are your kids into? If you were going to have a birthday party for your kid, what would be the theme? Think about that. And whatever the theme would be, Minnie Mouse, that's what you homeschool with. And your kids will, I don't know what the word is, but your kids will almost respect you more. They grow, they start to see, as they get older, they start to see that you value what they value, that it's not just something I like. This is something mommy likes too. And she thinks that it's fun. And it causes a connection to happen between you where you start to see, why does my child like Minnie Mouse? What is it about Minnie Mouse that gets her excited? Is it the little ears? Does she like a bunch of little, what I realized is that my daughter likes all the little animals that have fluffy fur and little ears. So now as she's gotten older, she's 8 now. Now that's evolved into her wanting to research foxes. It used to be hamsters. We read all the books about hamsters. Then it was kittens and like little toy dogs. Like, you know, the those dogs that get bred to be really little, they're called like teacup poodles. She wanted to research that. Then it evolved into foxes. And so I could have easily said, well, we're not learning about foxes in our curriculum. You know, you have to let that go. Or I could say, well, you know what? We are learning about anatomy anyway. Let's just research the anatomy of a fox. And let's find some chapter books about foxes. And let's take you to go see a fox at the zoo. Let's actually explore everything that there is to know about foxes. And you know what? We ended up learning so much geography about foxes because of all the different continents they're located on, all the different diseases they can transmit and what they like to eat. I mean, my daughter ended up spending so much time reading because of foxes and because she was obsessed with them that I look back on the fact that I almost silenced her over it. And I want to kick myself because I'm like, why would I ignore that she's blatantly telling me that she loves foxes just because it's not part of my curriculum? So ultimately, you can find yourself saving money with homeschooling just by using what you already have. You probably already have a ton of what your kid already likes, because naturally as a mom, you're going to get your kid things that they like. So you already have a bunch of Minnie Mouse things around your house. You already have a bunch of toy cars. So you can count the cars. You can let the cars go down little ramps and time how fast they go. And your kid will start to understand time. They'll start to understand counting and why you even need math in the first place, just by you showing them how does math show up in my daily experience? Why do I need to know 2 + 2? Why does that matter to me? Show them how 2 + 2 actually matters to them now by playing with them. And we were talking about that before, about how a lot of adults have forgotten what it's like to play. And if you have forgotten what it's like to play, then you may need some help learning how to play again, learning how to be a kid and sit on the floor, learning how to play a video game again. I mean, it's kind of sad, but a lot of moms have lost that side to themselves. But if you have, then admit it and be willing to get back to it, because it means you're going to connect with your kid and it means they're going to learn more and you're going to learn more. And that's going to help you in the long run, even if you do send your kid back to school later. Which kind of brings me to my next question. I get a lot of questions about, like, what happens when they want to go to school, or what happens if I want to send them back to school, or, like, God forbid something happens to me and they have to go to school, or what happens when they go to college? I don't know if you guys are thinking about this, because I know this session is geared more towards toddlers, so you guys have a lot of time before you think about that. But I know a lot of moms, they are kind of thinking in advance. And so I guess I'll address the idea of if your kid wants to go to school. So if you are homeschooling and your kid needs to go to school for some reason, then what the school do is give your child a placement test to see where they place. And if they need extra help, like if they're not scoring high enough to be placed in third grade, then they would be placed into like a remedial class is what would happen. But I will tell you that from interviewing most homeschoolers who've transitioned to school, most homeschoolers score way above where they're supposed to, and they end up being placed in higher grades. So for the most part, homeschoolers do really well when they transition to school, because they've learned what it means to learn for fun, and they have not had the experience of having test anxiety. So actually the funny thing is, a lot of homeschoolers who take tests, they kind of just take it and they're like, okay, they're not like how most kids are, but they're like, oh my gosh, how did I do? What did I get? They're like, I just answered what I knew. What I didn't know, I didn't know. I kind of read it and I picked what I thought was best. So most homeschoolers who go to college, they always score really high, or they score, or if they score below, then there's resources for them to catch up, just like any other kid. Like, I know, again, we assume because our kids go to school that when they get to college, they're going to be ready, but that's not always the truth. Okay. Like, I remember when I was applying to college, I did not score high enough to take the math level class I needed. And I went to public school and I was actually like a really high achieving student. But when it came to math, it was sort of like, I wanted to go into a medical program, so I needed a higher level math and I didn't score high enough for it, even though I went through the public school system and I did well. So I had to take a remedial math class to sharpen my skills. And then I went into that class the next semester. It wasn't a big deal. So when they want to go to school in college, that's always an option. That's never not an option just because you homeschool, if anyone is worried about that. I want to pause to check the chat, make sure I have not been checking it. I'm sorry if anyone's been asking stuff. Oh my gosh, she asked this question so long ago. So Rachel asked the question, with homeschooling toddlers, how do you ever get anything done if they're always home? Whereas if they're at school, you have several hours each day to do stuff. So yeah, I do get that question a lot about how do I get even homeschooling done when I also have toddlers. And the truth is, you start to involve your toddlers with what you're doing, and your toddlers learn quickly that the world is not about them anymore. So like, the mentality is that you think you can only get stuff done when your toddlers are sleeping. But when you're homeschooling, you learn that's not the case anymore, especially when your toddlers start to stop napping. You learn quickly that if I wait for my toddlers to go to sleep, I'll never get anything done. So I do have my toddlers help me with laundry. They do load the washer machine with me and do the dryer with me. When it comes to like other things like cooking, I do have my toddlers help me cook. They mix things. And yes, it's a little messier. Yes, it takes longer, but I account extra time for that. Like, I don't start dinner at 5 o'clock. I started at 4 o'clock if I'm going to have them help me. The other thing in my situation is I have older kids. So my older kids can play with my younger ones. I don't always have my toddlers in my face. But if you do have only a toddler, then they probably are in your face all the time. And you do need to account for that, the fact that they want to be involved. And normally, with most toddlers, when they get the chance to be involved and you give them that one-on-one attention, they eventually like are okay to be on their own after that. But if you're always expecting them to play independently and to not be involved with what you're doing, that's not natural. The normal thing is that most children want to watch what their adults in their lives are doing, and they want to imitate, which is how they learn, and they want to participate, which is how they learn. So every time your child wants to imitate and participate with you, you should accept that as a homeschooling lesson. So cooking in the kitchen is a huge way kids learn. My kids are 8 and 10 and they can independently cook several meals. Like they can make breakfast. They can, and they've been doing that for several years. Like since they were 5, they've been cooking. Did they get burns? Yeah. We talked about burns. We talked about how you treat burns, and it's a life skill. You need to know that you get burned sometimes. Like, and I don't let them be alone. Obviously, like I was with them when they were younger, but now that they're older, I kind of let them be in the kitchen and I'm just nearby. I don't have to be with them. But when it comes time to self-care, which I see Melissa asking about self-care, totally homeschool moms have a hard time with self-care because it takes motherhood to the next level. So what I do is I do drop my kids off for classes. And my husband does take my kids to sports. So my husband takes my kids to track 3 days a week. And so I don't have my older kids at night 3 days a week because they're at track practice. So that's a great time for me to have self-care because then I just have my toddlers and it's like half the work. But then on the weekends, my husband is home or he's like, you know, back and forth between sports and he's able to stay with them while I like sneak out and go to the dollar store. That's my self-care. Or I'll go to the nail salon or I will just go and get ice cream. It just depends on what I need for self-care that weekend. But I mean, I think that what you need for self-care probably like it changes when you're homeschooling because you're not going to get 6 hours of self-care anymore. So maybe if you're expecting 6 hours of self-care every day, then that might be unrealistic anyway, even if your kids were in school. 6 hours is a lot of time for you to have to yourself. And I mean, that's probably really nice. But what you have to also realize is that when your kids come home from school, you're going to be back on and you're not going to get to move at a schedule that is for you. So like if your kids have projects to do or field trips to do or homework to be done, or they have also like sports practices, you'll quickly realize that whatever self-care you got during the day is going to quickly get depleted as soon as your kids get home and you have to like run on the hamster wheel with them 5 days a week to keep them on that schedule. So self-care is something that I think whether you decide to send your kids to school or not, you have to think about it a little differently. So I don't know if that answers your question about self-care. And I'd love to hear what you guys are doing for self-care right now, because self-care is something that probably varies for each person, like how much they need and what they do for self-care. let me see what this says in the chat. So Melissa's saying, do you have a routine or a rhythm of the day? So yeah, I do have that. And most homeschoolers do have a routine, not a schedule. So I know like probably a lot of you are urged to make yourself a homeschool schedule where at 9 o'clock you sit down in front of the chalkboard and you do math. And then after 30 minutes, you take a break. And a lot of homeschoolers, like the first year, they want to do that. They want to do school at home. And I've even known some moms to make their kids wear uniforms because they're like, you are not going to sit in pajamas all day. So you could do that. But for me personally, our rhythm is that we wake up like around 8 o'clock and I allow my kids an hour for like personal self-care, prayer, showers, brushing their teeth. And they need a full hour to do that before they're like ready to do anything else. After that, we usually spend like 30 minutes doing a devotional time where we, as a family, we read the Bible together. We pray, we talk about different faith topics. And sometimes that can go on for an hour, depending on like how good the conversation gets. Sometimes the conversation gets super juicy. And I'm so glad that I don't have to like end the conversation to quickly get to school or something. Those are the most important things that I make sure happens every day. Now for the rest of the day, it kind of depends if my kids have a class. If my kids have a class, then I do have to hurry up and get them to that class. Like on Thursdays, my son has a class at 9:30 that I have to drop him off for. So it depends on what I have going on that day. I would say every day is not the same. And so you'd kind of have to accept that with homeschooling, you're probably never going to be home and you're going to have a very busy schedule. You're not going to be home every day when you're homeschooling. Most homeschoolers actually have a hard time staying home because of all the activities there are to do. So yeah, when it comes to routine and rhythms, I don't know if I'm answering your question thoroughly because that's like a really big question, but you're free to pick any routine or rhythm that you like. if math is important to you to cover every day, that's something that's important to me. I just make sure we get a lesson of math done every day. And then reading is something that happens every night. So my kids actually have a book lamp that they attach to their books. And every night we go to bed an hour earlier so that they have a full hour that where they get to read, or I read to them. Even though my kids know how to read, I still make them let me read to them, or we listen to an audiobook together. Now Libby's asking about teaching toddlers, if there's a baseline way, or if there's a baseline of what lessons and skills and curriculum to start with them by like age. So I don't know if you mean like developmental milestones, like if there's a way for you to know if your kids are behind on developmental like academic skills, is that what you mean? Or do you mean like literal curriculum? Okay, so she says yes. Okay, so there is a place that you can look at developmental milestones. I'll just pull that up really quick, where you can see like what your kids should be able to do. But I would advise you guys to be really careful with looking at milestones, because this is like the beginning of disappointment for you. By looking at developmental milestones, you're going to find something that your kid doesn't do yet. And you're going to think your kid sucks. They're behind. I suck as a mother. Why don't I know? Why didn't I teach them this? And it's a vicious cycle of you beating yourself up by looking at the milestones. You have to be careful when you're looking at these, because these are just guidelines. They're not requirements. It doesn't mean your child is behind because they haven't hit these. It means that, like, I think it means that 50% of kids have done this. So there's another 50% that haven't done this. So you have to keep that in mind when you're looking at milestones. But yeah, the CDC does have milestones that you can look at for what they should do for each age. So you can just type in developmental milestones by age 4, let's just say, and it will tell you things that they should be able to do. And then the same thing by age 10, what they should be able to do. And you'll find a list of things. And they even have it broken down by subject too. So you can see. So that's another thing with charter schools, is they do give me a list of things my kids should know for each subject. So like for history, they'll be like, they should know about the California Gold Rush. They should know, you know, they'll give me a list of things they should know for math. And so sometimes I check off the box and I say, yes, my kids do know that. And then other times I can't check off the box. So I'll say, no, we haven't gotten to that yet. And that's okay. I don't know if you guys remember when you were in school, your teacher always skipped chapters. It was always like, okay, do problems 1 through 10 and skip 11, 12, and 13, and then do questions 15 through 20. So it's okay if your kids have gaps. It's okay if your kids don't know certain things, because chances are you also have gaps in your own learning, and you're okay. You made it to adulthood. You're still a productive human. So I just want to, you know, give you guys that little bit of a warning about comparing your kids, looking to keep them on target. You know, be kind to yourself and be careful that you don't create like a very uncomfortable learning environment, because you're trying to keep your kids up to a certain level that they're going to get to anyway, but they need like loving support along the way. And you need support too. In order to do this homeschooling thing, you really do need support. You cannot try to do this on your own, in terms of like not having anyone else in your life who supports you. So I just want to say that too, that in order to do this thing in the long term, a lot of homeschool moms burn out because they try to keep up with all these standards and milestones and curriculum. And they burn out and they end up sending their kids back to school. And that's okay. But I will say that just because they're in school, like I said before, it doesn't mean that they're thriving. It just means that it's no longer your problem, or you can't see the problem. You know, it's always your problem when it's your kid. So just be careful when you're looking up the milestones. But yes, there are places you can go to look up like skills that they should have and when to start trying to teach them something. And honestly, that's what curriculum is. I'm going to my other question about what curriculum to get. That's what curriculum really is. It's kind of like a prescription. It's not a prescription. It's like a buffet. So have you guys ever been to like a Chinese buffet or an all-you-can-eat buffet? That's your curriculum. All those trays of food are all the different curriculum options. There's literally 1,000. It's like a smorgasbord. If you've ever been to a smorgasbord, there's like 1,000 different curriculum options. And when you guys begin to research curriculum, you'll very likely get overwhelmed about all the different options that there are. So just like when you go to a buffet, you don't get everything from the buffet, right? At least you guys shouldn't be doing that. When you go to a buffet, you just take like the things you know you like, the things that taste good to you that you know you've had, or maybe you try something new that you've never tried before, right? But for the most part, you're not going to take from every single tray. You're going to try a few things at a time. And then you go back to the buffet later when you're hungry again. And that's sort of what curriculum really should be. It's not a prescription where it tells you how many times a day to do it and how much of it you should have. And you have to do this. It's more like it gives you a guide as to what your kid could do. But if they're more hungry to go into a certain topic, like say your kid's obsessed with snakes. My son was obsessed with snakes at one point. He could not let go of that. He needed to know every species of snake. He needed to know like what continents they live on and what temperatures they can live at. What does it mean to be cold-blooded? Like we were obsessed with snakes for like a solid 2 years when my son was a toddler. And honestly, it's what caught him. It's what got him sucked into reading. He actually got obsessed with reading encyclopedias about snakes when he was like 4 or 5 years old because it was his passion at the time. So of course I couldn't find a curriculum about snakes for toddlers. It was hard to find that, but I was able to find him resources to feed his hunger. So just be careful with curriculum. Don't let it dictate you. Like the curriculum is there to serve you. It's not there to tell you what to do. Like you're a slave. The curriculum is your slave. Actually, it serves you and teaches you about what you can give your kids, if that makes sense. Which I know that's hard to digest, especially if you've been through the public school system. You probably feel like you have to do everything the curriculum says. You have to check every box, do every problem, do every chapter, but that's not true. I see in the chat that Melissa's asking, when explaining to a charter school about homeschooling, is it challenging or about unschooling? So I don't know if you guys are familiar with unschooling, but unschooling is sort of like a approach to homeschooling where you don't do a lot of traditional homework. Like you kind of don't have a structure per se. You let the child lead in some instances. And so unschooling can look very different for different families. Some people are like radically unschooling. That means that they don't give their kids any rules. They don't do any structure. They don't do any book work. They let their kids do whatever they want. And actually some of those kids really thrive. I know that sounds crazy. Some of those kids really thrive because they learn how to become independent and self-regulate without having an adult tell them like, it's bedtime now. It's, you can't have that. They learn on their own, like, I need to get off the screen or I need to spend more time with this. And they eventually do learn their own skill set. But unschooling, I actually am more an unschooler myself, but I'm not a radical unschooler. And when it comes to explaining to charter schools, like, how are you unschooling and actually getting anything done? It can be challenging. It depends on the teacher that you have. For us, when we were doing foxes, that wasn't on our curriculum. When we were studying foxes and when we were studying snakes, it wasn't on our curriculum to study those things. But I was able to think about it in an academic way. So I was able to explain to her that when my daughter was obsessed with foxes, it wasn't like she was just playing video games with foxes. Like she was actually learning. So same thing when my daughter got obsessed with clay, I was able to tell my teacher, like she was researching the different types of clay, the temperatures that they cure at. She was creating different items with it. So she was, you know, it can be challenging though. But my teacher was okay with it. Hopefully that wasn't confusing to anyone who's unfamiliar with unschooling, but that was the question that Melissa asked in the chat about unschooling. Okay, where are we now? Okay, the other question I get is that like, will my kids miss out on things like prom and sports and school experiences and all that sort of thing? So the homeschool community usually does put on a homeschool prom. So prom, if that's like a big thing in your head, there is proms for homeschoolers. Maybe it's not as big as what they would get in school, but prom is actually not the best place for kids to be at anyway. There's a lot of very shady things that happen at prom night, as if you don't remember. When it comes to sports, my son and my daughter are both very active with sports. So sports are not an issue. They cannot play sports with the public school unless the school gives them special permission though. So my kids do play, they play sports privately, meaning I have to pay for them, but my charter school would pay for them too. I just haven't, my husband coaches, and I don't know, I haven't actually gone through the steps to have him become a vendor to have the school pay. So sports are not an issue. If I wanted my son to get like a scholarship or something later on, again, I could always let him go to school and he could get, he could get scouted from a public high school, or he could even be scouted as a private athlete. So I want to reassure you guys, when it comes to sports, there's no issue with them having access to scholarships or being scouted to be to play professionally. That's always an option for homeschoolers. And actually, a lot of people choose to homeschool so that their children can focus on sports more and developing themselves as an athlete, if that's what their special skill is. So yeah, like with gymnastics and football in particular, my kids have a lot more time to devote energy to that than if they were in school. Does that answer the question? Does anyone else have specific concerns about like their kids missing out on a school experience? When you're part of the homeschool community, like we pretty much have Valentine's Day parties, Christmas parties. We have a ton of events for homeschoolers. We almost can't even keep up with all the events that are happening. I think we have more events in the homeschool community than the school does at this point. But yeah, in Santa Clarita in particular, we have a ton of experiences for your kids not to miss out on anything. Okay. So moving on to some of the last questions I have about, let's say you're a working parent or you don't have time to homeschool, or like say you're going to have a newborn, or like, let's just say you don't feel qualified to teach because you didn't like school yourself. So you don't even feel like you know enough to teach something. I kind of want to address some of those concerns because there are a lot of moms who work full time and they're single parents and they homeschool. And I wish some of them would have logged on today to share how they do that, because I'm not personally in that situation, but my husband does work a lot. And so I do pretty much take on the bulk of homeschooling. So when it comes to being a working parent and trying to homeschool at the same time, I think what a lot of those moms do is they have their children stay with another homeschool mom during the day, or they drop their kids off to homeschool centers where they can take classes. And then they just do some of the homeschooling with them at night or on the weekends. So there's totally a way to work out working and homeschooling. If you're in the situation where you have a newborn on the way and you think you'd be better off dropping your toddler off so that you can just focus on the newborn, that's totally an option. But you are kind of robbing your toddler of the experience of seeing what it's like to interact with an infant. And I'm not saying that that's like, I shouldn't say that you're robbing, because that makes it feel like it's a bad decision. I don't want to make it seem like that, but I am saying you're taking away an experience from them by doing that, but it might be something that you need to do as you're transitioning. But what I want to say is that when I was pregnant with my twins, and I had a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, I did consider sending my kids to school just because I was like, how am I going to homeschool and have newborn toddlers? I mean, newborn twins. But I thought about it. I'm like, it might be harder for me to wake up in the morning after having been up all night with my twins to drop my kids off to school and make sure that they're also dressed and have their homework ready. So, and then have to also do that all over again to pick them up when they get out. So you might be surprised how it's easier to homeschool when you have a newborn, because you're not running back and forth to do pickups and drop-offs. When I was pregnant with my twins, I was able to do a ton of research about twins, and we used my pregnancy as the lesson. So we learned about, our homeschool lesson was all about babies and what developmental milestones they don't have yet, how they can't see in color, how they can't see distance. And we use the baby as the lesson. The baby is the lesson. The baby isn't like a distraction from the lesson. The baby is actually teaching your toddler or your child something that, you know, they may never learn again. It's like their once in a lifetime opportunity. So yeah, for us, we learned about conjoint twins. We learned about identical twins versus fraternal twins. We learned about how twins even, you know, come about, and we used what the life experience was to be the lesson, since I was going through it anyway. Does someone want to ask a question? I heard someone come off of mute. No. Okay. Now, if you feel like you're not qualified to teach because you didn't like school in the first place, and you feel like you don't know math or something, we kind of talked about this before, but if you feel like you don't know something, then it's smart for you to admit you don't know it and show your kid what you do about it. So it's either you're going to learn it with your kid, you're going to go one lesson ahead of them and you're going to learn it as you go, or you're going to hire a tutor to teach them it, or you're going to drop them off for a class, or you're going to find another homeschool mom who loves that subject anyway. So for example, I love science, and I know a lot of moms don't love science. I teach a veterinary studies class from my home every Friday, and I have 7 kids who get dropped off, and I do a science lesson with them every Friday. If I wanted to, all of those moms, they also have their own skill set. Like, some of them are really into art, some of them are really into math. I could say, can you teach my kids this math? I don't get it. Can you do that? And they would. So when you're a part of a homeschool community, you end up getting to know that there's moms who have certain skill sets. They're more patient with certain topics, and you can swap for different things. So you can do that, but you can also do co-ops. Co-ops are where parents cooperate together to give a child an experience. So co-ops are another option. Let me know if anyone has questions about co-ops. I think to me, it's very familiar, but other moms might be like, what the heck is a co-op? So let me know if you guys are having any questions about any like words I'm just throwing out there. But I do want to say that if school was a bad experience for you, or let's just say you came out of school and you actually don't remember anything, then that kind of speaks to why we aren't sending our kids to school, because we know the system doesn't work. It wasn't effective for us. We went through the system ourselves and we still don't know it. So that's part of what I would say to you, is that if you feel like you didn't like school yourself and you don't feel qualified to teach, even though you went through the system, then let that be motivation for you to not put your kids through the same thing, because you know it didn't work for you. Let me see if anyone's saying anything. No one said anything. Bye, Melissa. She has to go. That's pretty much everything I was going to talk to you guys about. I know the last question was about what curriculum do I get, but I kind of already touched on that, as well as the schedule question. So I'm going to kind of just leave the room open for anyone to ask any last minute questions before we close up. I know it's a lot of information, so feel free to ask anything. Nothing is a dumb question. Let's see. No questions. You guys are so quiet. Does anyone want to share any experiences that they're having, or concerns that they have, fears that they have about homeschooling? Are you guys able to hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to see if I can share with you guys a few websites that you can use. One of the things that when you're considering to start homeschooling that you should look into is called de-schooling. And de-schooling is where you take a time of a period, like sometimes it's like 3 months, where you start to unlearn some of the myths you might think you know about how learning happens. So let me show you guys a website. Let's see if I can share my screen again. There's a ton of homeschooling podcasts and blogs, like depending on how you learn. If you know that you love podcasts, or you love listening to books, or like anything you listen to, you remember, then I would suggest looking into homeschooling podcasts. But if you need like visuals and you want to see videos, then I would totally suggest looking at blogs about homeschooling, just because it is a lot of information and it's overwhelming. You may need to like read something many times. And as a homeschool mom myself, I make sure that I'm always freshening up my skills, like reading different books about education, about learning methods. And I'm just always keeping myself up to date with different options and different curriculum, different like skills that I could better myself with. So when you're first learning to homeschool, the first thing you should do once you like know the laws of your state is you should look into deschooling. And deschooling is just an adjustment period where you get to know your kid and you learn how they learn and you connect with them as a person. So some people never went through this before with their kids, but it's really, really important. It's one of the first things that most homeschool experts say you should do before you start homeschooling. And some people actually do this deschooling process every year, like every summer. It's kind of like you're having a summer break with your kid. And it's a way for you to like relax into the process that homeschooling is going to be very different than school. You may ask your kid, like, what are some of their goals, like things they're curious about, the things that they want to learn about. You may start to decide, like, are you a visual learner? Are you like, do you like to play more? You may start to like kind of explore all these different approaches, these different curriculums. It's a time for you to do your research. It's a time for you to sort of relax and learn. And then you jump into your homeschool rhythm and your routine and trying to do lessons. So you don't just jump into homeschool, like, let's do my rhythm. Like, let's get into the charter school. So I wanted to just show you guys this website where it goes through what is homeschooling, if it's right for you, why you shouldn't search for curriculum first, what your state requires, you know? So basically, this is just a great website. It's called thehomeschoolmom.com. Can you see it, my screen? thehomeschoolmom.com. So many great resources on this website. She has, look at all this stuff. She has help by subject, local and state. She even has meal plans, a homeschool planner. She teaches about different homeschooling styles. She has a homeschool 101 section on there, like a guide for parents. So pretty much all the things we talked about today, you'll find on her website. I've used this website for a really long time. You'll see all the different topics she goes into. And then the other thing I was going to show you guys is if you go on to her local and state, you can pick the state that you're in, which I guess we're all in California, and you can get state specific information. There's always homeschool conventions going on too, kind of like homeschool conferences. And you can see when there's conferences coming up. I'm actually going to be a guest speaker at a conference that's coming up next month. It'll be a digital conference, like a virtual one. It's going to be released in March. So feel free to send me a message if you want information on that. I do also have my own podcast that I decided to release. But I'm thinking of going to this one, this California Homeschool Convention. It's in June. And it's basically a place where you can listen to different homeschool experts give advice on different topics. Sometimes they're digital, like virtual, but this one I think is in person. I went last year and it was so much fun. And then they also have like a curriculum expo where all the different curriculum creators come into this big room and they have the curriculum there for you to shop. You can flip through it. You can ask them questions. You can get pricing information. Definitely super overwhelming, but so much fun. So definitely check out a homeschool conference. It'll leave you feeling so refreshed and so encouraged. If you can still see my screen, you'll see that I'm going into a conference website right now just to show you. Like an example, Sarah McKenzie is one of my favorite speakers. She actually has a website called The Read Aloud Revival, where she helps parents get back into reading aloud with their kids. And she teaches you why it's important. But these are the different topics that she teaches. She has 6 kids that she homeschool along with a set of twins. But she does like mom to mom panels where like she actually covers the topic of how to stop toddlers. Everything from toddlers to math tears to how to get dinner on the table. So like any topic you'd want to know, she's pretty much going to cover it in her talk. So she also has a podcast with a ton of encouraging information. So I would definitely suggest if you're thinking about homeschooling to check out one of these conferences, because you'll get a lot of information. Like you'll get answers to questions that you didn't even know you had, basically. All right. Let's see. The other thing, one more thing I want to show you guys is where to find the law. If you need like legal help, HSLDA was one I was talking about before. They also help with like, say you need insurance or something. If you need insurance to get like a, I'm actually looking into getting insurance for meeting with a group at a place. Like, you know how the library would want you to have insurance to meet there as a group. They actually would help you with that. Let me see if I can make sure that you guys are able to see this. You guys are so quiet. Hopefully you can see my screen, but this is the California homeschool law. And you can see what it is in other states. Like if you're thinking of moving to a different state, you can actually click on that state and it'll show you what the homeschooling law is in that state as well. In California, there's no immunization law requirement. There are mandated subjects that you have to teach. There's the age requirement.
Really?
Yeah.
Hi, I don't think anyone can see your screen.
Oh, thank you for telling me. Let me start.
Yeah, I messaged, but I don't.
Okay, how about now?
No, not yet.
Now?
No, no one's seen it for the last 5 minutes, I think.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we both met. We were messaging in the chat.
Wow.
Sorry.
Okay. I will add the links for you guys in the chat so you could see it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, guys. I don't know why it's not working. So in the chat, you'll see the link for the legal information and help by state. So you can just have that in your like in your back pocket to reference. And then the homeschoolmom.com is the other place I was talking about where you can just get all types of support and help. And then you can also find conferences in your area. So those both are in the chat right now. I'm sorry, my screen sharing stopped working. I think every time I change screens, it actually will stop letting me share for whatever reason. But yeah, so that was everything I wanted to share with you guys. I'm curious to hear what your questions are. If you got any answers to your questions, if you still have lingering questions or fears. I know that I had a ton of fears when I was first starting to homeschool. So feel free to like lay it out there. I have my friend Miss Jean still here. So she's another homeschool mom. She has twins and an older elementary age child. I think she's fourth grade. So if you have questions, like feel free to lay it out there.
Can you hear me at all, Ashley?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hey, Libby, twin mom, hashtag.
Awesome. Thank you so much. With toddler twins, my question is, in giving each kid like individual attention, my son is always interrupting when I try to do something with my daughter. Have you found a way to like go with each child in between?
Yeah, that's another question I meant to address. I'm glad you brought that up. So totally, you're going to get interruptions when you have multiple kids, especially when you have twins. They always want to do whatever each other are doing. But just, yeah, with having multiple kids, you're going to get interruptions. And you do need to teach your kids about this is what happens when I get interrupted. I'm not talking about the kid who's doing the interrupting. I'm talking about the kid who's getting interrupted. They're watching you to see how you deal with interruptions, because in life, they're going to get interrupted too. And so they're going to see, does mommy scream when she gets interrupted? Does she get mad when she gets interrupted? Does she get distracted when she gets interrupted? So she's going to watch you to see how you respond to the interruption. And you're going to have to kind of try to be careful with yourself as you respond, because you want your daughter to see, like, okay, in life you're going to be interrupted, and this is how you handle it with patience, and this is how you prepare. So besides that, there's also preparing for the interruptions in advance. So I find that my kids don't interrupt me as much when I fill each of their cups up first before expecting them to leave me alone. So I do spend a lot of one-on-one time with, I spend time with all of them first in the morning so that no one feels like they haven't gotten me. And so usually once I've done that with them, like either we do a tea party together first thing in the morning, we go out for a walk first thing in the morning, like we do something together. That way, like my kids are kind of sick of me by the time we get back, they want to go and do their own thing. But otherwise expecting toddlers not to interrupt you is like expecting to eat Oreos and brush your teeth at the same time. Like there's totally no way that your toddlers aren't going to interrupt you. And if you expect that, then you're going to always be disappointed and angry. And so mm-hmm. I found that for me, I had to expect that my toddlers were going to interrupt. And so when they do interrupt, I find that it's because they want to either participate or they want to want more attention.
Yeah.
So the only time I can spend one-on-one time with my toddler twins is when I give an activity to one of them that the other one doesn't know about. So I'll give one of my twins, like if my older kids can't hang out with them because they're like at practice or something, I'll have one of my twins go in a separate room with Play-Doh, which I know that sounds like a horrible idea, but it's not. I have sent them in the backyard before, or I'll let them watch something on their tablet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an anti-screen mom, totally fine with it. But if you are an anti-screen mom, you can also do watercolor painting, which is a less messy alternative to regular paint. And I find that most kids are actually pretty distracted by that, especially if it's special and you never let them do that. Then if you do let them do that, they're probably going to leave you alone for a good 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know. So basically just having reserved special activities that your kids never get to do that all of a sudden they get to do for 30 minutes. I wouldn't expect your toddler to leave you alone for more than 30 minutes. That's
just... Oh yeah. No, my toddlers don't leave me alone for more than 10.
Yeah. So like you're pretty much actually what most people say is that however old your kid is, that's how long their
attention span.
So if you have a 2 or 3 year old, then you don't even need your kid to leave you alone for more than 5 minutes. Cause technically like you could have already accomplished what you wanted to, but I would say in your situation, because you have twins, it's probably best to like try to do something with them together. And then if your son gets bored, then go ahead, go do what you want to do. Then you mission accomplished. And if he doesn't, and he stays and does the activity with you, then that day you didn't get to do one-on-one, and that's okay. You know?
Cool. Yep. That sounds good.
Yeah.
It's good to hear that from other twin moms too. Cause I feel like, especially with a boy and a girl, my son is so much more physical, where I know my girl, she would sit and read with me for hours on end. But my son, I mean, it's going to turn into a wrestling match after 5-10 minutes if I'm trying to do something with her. So it's good to, you know, just hear that it is normal and that's what's going to happen and work through it.
Yeah. Well, it's a big, big mentality switch. It's a big mentality switch. Cause like, I feel like a lot of moms who think they're going to homeschool, they think like, okay, that means I have to have one-on-one quiet time. That means I have to find something for my other kids to do. And how am I going to do that? And how many minutes of alone time am I going to get? And I think if we think about it that way, it feels like an impossible task versus if we say like, I'm not expecting to get 30 minutes of alone time. I know that that's not realistic. So by like lowering your expectations, you start to realize like, wow, I actually can get a lot done by just playing with them and not expecting that they're going to leave me alone. Like, why don't I just play with them? If they're interrupting, what are they interrupting you for? It's not like they're interrupting you because like, I don't know. I think sometimes as moms, we miss why our kids are interrupting us. It's normally because they are trying to communicate like a need that they have. They want to play. They're hungry. They're thirsty. They're bored. So they're trying to communicate to you what they need. And I've just found that when my toddlers are interrupting me, it's because they're trying to let me know that they need something. So I found that leaving snacks out, like a cupcake tray. I don't know if you've ever done the cupcake tray, but when I'm about to do like an intense lesson with my older kids, I prepare a cupcake tray of like in each of those little holes, I put like different snacks, like Cheerios in one, grapes in another, blueberries in another, like there's 12 holes. So you just put 12 different snacks in there and you'd be surprised what a tray of snacks does. a tray of snacks, you know, really can buy you a good 20, 30 minutes of quiet because they're eating. So, and because it's small quantities of food and there's so many different varieties, I have found that my twins have left me alone just because there's like this exciting new tray of snacks. So I call it the picky toddler tray, but it's because I'm like, what do you guys want to eat? And I just put that tray out. But you can even do that with activities too. You can put paint, like water paint, in them too, and let them paint outside. But yeah, that's kind of what I've tried. You basically have to be willing to try so many different things before you're going to find something that works. And then as soon as you do find something that works, you're probably going to have to change again as they get older, like a new technique.
That makes sense. Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I would say with your son, like, you'd be surprised how much you'll probably need to do like the crazy learning with him. My son has taught me like what it means to think outside the box, because my son doesn't. Sure. Yeah. You're going to have to play cars with him. You're going to have to count those cars. You're going to have to time how fast it takes the cars to get down a ramp. You're going to have to run with him and like hop to different leap pads. Like, they're going to make you move. And you know what? I think as your son gets older, you'll realize how much you thought you were teaching him stuff, but the whole time he was actually teaching you how to think differently, how to learn with your body. And that's only something I'm catching on to now. My son is turning 10. I'm like, you know what? This kid has taught me a lot of like really important skills that I never thought about learning in a different way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would totally lean into that. If your son is like interrupting and wants to play, then I would lean into him first. If he's the more intrusive one, lean into him first and bring your daughter along. And once he's filled and he's exhausted of you, then you can do like the quiet artsy stuff with your daughter, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, that's what I have a similar situation actually with my older ones, because my daughter's really into art. And I find that I just can't do art with her in the morning like she wants me to, but she knows that now. She knows that like art is something that happens towards the middle end of the day when everyone else has been filled and we want quiet time. We'll like do our art together, whether it's like watercolor or color pencils or clay. And it's kind of like a cute little quiet time activity to do anyway, to wind down. So kind of works out. So yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts or like lingering fears or questions or anything that they want to share before we end? You guys are so quiet. Either that or like I already covered everything and you guys are just stuffed with information and overwhelmed. So I'm going to end the recording here then. Let me see.